All right, so we are now being recorded, and this is Anna. It is, what's today's date? This is the 4th of November, and it's our first Q&A call for the fall 2013 of the 10-week List Body Transformation Program. And, just to make sure that everything is coming across clearly and you can actually hear me and all of that, I'm going to open up all the lines, and just that way I can get a little feedback here. So hi, so can every you can hear me? Yes, just kind of say yes, hello.
Yes.
Yes.
That's great. Okay, so I sometimes I wonder, and I just wanted to be sure since I was dealing with a couple of technical details. I'm going to put us back on mute just so that background noise isn't an issue and stuff like that. But hi. Okay. So we're going to get started, and essentially, as far as our weeks are concerned, week three's materials will be going out tomorrow. So that's kind of where we are in the scheme of things, which I want to say, wherever you are is great. And that's a really important thing to do, and I may actually have like a little week break, kind of looking at holiday schedule and things like that. So I'll keep you posted on that. But what I wanted to, you know what, first I want to open it up for question and answer, and then I'm going to just kind of cover a couple of things. I always like to inject a little bit of content into these calls to support what you are doing, just to kind of beef things up a little bit. But why don't we just dive right into questions? And I do have, let's see, it looks like I only have one question that was written in to me from somebody who could not make this call. And I'll double check that again before I finish the call, just to make sure that there was just one. But if you have a question, go ahead and unmute yourself by pressing star. Or if you want to just comment on something or have something that you want to share. Hi.
Hi, Anna. It's Pamela.
Hey, Pamela. Good to hear your voice.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I've been working the program really diligently, but I've noticed I've been kind of isolating myself from the outside world, and I am going on a trip to visit family, traveling all the way across the country. I'm wondering if you have any tips for having less control than you're used to.
So basically, while you're traveling, being able to maintain what you've initiated.
Right, and remain somewhat flexible, right, to
Yeah.
blend with the surroundings and not completely cave in.
Right, of course. So you're traveling, you're going to New Mexico? Is that where your family is?
Going to Pennsylvania, so
Pennsylvania.
a full day of traveling and airline food and that sort of thing.
Is that is your main concern the actual travel, like the airline travel, or is it once you're there, or is it both?
The whole package.
The whole package, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that a big part of what this, what this program is about, my philosophy is about, is to put in, like, to create your intention, okay? Anytime, to set your intention around how you want to treat yourself, what things are going to look like for you without you actually knowing. I mean, there are going to be unknowns. When we go on a trip, there are lots of unknowns, and we don't have control, and really ultimately we don't have control anyway, but that our surroundings change, and so we don't know where do I go, what's going to show up. So I would initially, Pamela, set an intention for your trip. And within that intention, be clear on, okay, when I'm going out, when I'm going out to eat, that, you know, I'm making the best choice possible, but I don't need to expect perfection from myself. Like, just things that might seem kind of obvious, but that you are going to allow for. And also, thinking about the things that you have implemented, that you are doing, and that are working for you, and allow, like, seeing where there can be some give and take. Like, for example, I'm trying to think of a good example from my own, you know, my own self. Which, let's use the example of organic. Okay, so you're going to go and you'll say, well, you know what, I'm going to allow for a little more leeway in the realm of organic. Like, I just, you know, that may be out of necessity, but just to kind of state that for yourself. Allowing for that to happen. That said, I don't think we've, like, quite gotten into that, the whole organic thing yet. And but what I would say about that is, and this is for everyone as well as Pamela, that if you're having to make the choice of where am I not gonna be as regimented in the area of organics. Then that could be in the plant world, you know, fruits, vegetables, things like that. But when it comes to animal products, I like encourage all of you to, when you eat out, to really be, to just not settle in that department, because it's so much more concentrated when we're talking about meat or dairy or animal products like that. So I just kind of coming up with some parameters for yourself, Pamela, within that realm that you create. I mean, that's a lot of what I teach. It's like self-created. And then from a practical standpoint, what to do. I feel like when you're air traveling, I'll actually just share with you what I do when I travel by air. I bring a bunch of little snacks that are high in water content. And the fact of the matter is, when you're traveling by air, you don't have to eat a lot. You're sitting around. You're flying. It's a great time for your body to kind of have a little bit of a break and get a lot of water and just, like, lighter things to eat. That's how I see it. And it's really worked for me when I've done that. And it's minimized jet lag. It's just made me feel a lot better on the other end. And all of that. So I'll bring things like cucumbers and carrots and, you know, celery. And if I'm able to, I'll even make a green smoothie. And I will freeze it. Because if you bring something frozen through the checkout, it doesn't qualify as a liquid. So you can freeze water, too. The only thing is, it needs time to thaw. So sometimes it'll be that I'll freeze it and then I'll have it when I arrive. Or sometimes it's actually that it will thaw during the plane ride, depending on how long the plane ride is. But, you know, that's the only thing with freezing. But that means you can get through security with a frozen green juice or you know. And that's, like, that's a great thing to have on the plane or once you land. But I usually like those high water kind of apples, you know, maybe some raw almonds or something like that. Perhaps I might even bring an avocado and something to put the avocado on, even just sheets of nori. I mean, these are just things that I'll do. Again, it's just light stuff that's going to provide some nourishment. It doesn't have to be a lot. That's what I like to do when I'm traveling, when I'm on the plane or in the airport and all of that. And then once you get there, I mean, you've been there before, Pamela, so you know this is your family. Once you get there, you kind of have an idea of what might be available to you, and being like, okay, I can have some things at my family's place that I'll know and that I can pick up at a local store and have there. But then also know that you may be going out to eat or somebody else may be preparing food for you, and that's kind of where the parameters come in. And then also communicating. It's your family. So, you know, I see that as just communicating with them, like, I'd like to do this. I can help out. I can, and there's a lot of different relationship dynamics within families, but I think even from, so this goes way back, and then I'll be quiet and let you ask another question if you need to, but this goes way back to when I was growing up, and me and my sister both were in kind of a vegetarian thing, and we were making changes around that, and we were both vegetarian. And so then holidays would come around, and what we started doing was having kind of a collaborative effort where we would contribute, we would make a dish, we would help plan the menu. We would look at alternatives, and it got to the point where actually the family was like, oh, they kind of liked it. and so that's what I would offer out. A lot of times we think, and you know what? People aren't always going to be receptive. And I'm not even saying that you have to, this isn't about vegetarianism versus non-vegetarianism, but it's just about different ways of doing things and being able to present that. And I certainly have, from the holiday perspective, I have some holiday recipes that I've posted on my blog. You can always search that, that I have posted over the years. So, anyway, does that help at all, Pamela?
Yes, that was all very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, great. It's a good question, and it always comes up.
Great. Well, it does require a commitment really to make a change, and for me that's been in a routine and a comfortable familiar place, so that's kind of my maximum challenge, I think, to be trying to install new eating habits while traveling to see my family where the old habits were born. So
right, exactly. And it is kind of injecting that little that bit of freshness and that new perspective and the willingness to both be flexible and like honor certain decisions and certain growth that you have. And I'll just share with you something. I was just back where I grew up for about 2.5 weeks, and what was really especially evident to me this time, but you know, but certainly every time I go back, is how much I've changed. You know, it's like every time I go back, I'm like, oh my God, I have really like, and honoring it and being like, I felt like it was really good change. I'm like, wow, I have come such a long way in my own life and everything. And so almost going back with the idea that you're going to be presented with that, and how cool is that? We know that we're growing and we're evolving. I think it's cool. You know, I that's part of life for me. So that's what I would offer out to you and to everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for the question. So so you can go ahead and mute yourself, unless there's anything else that you want to share. So if there's anybody else that would like to offer something up and ask a question or share a little breakthrough or a big breakthrough, even star six.
Hi, Anna. This is Lauren.
Hey, Lauren. How are you?
I'm great. Well, I posted this in the group, but I was super excited because I usually get these awful menstrual cramps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just really annoying and, you know, not fun to deal with. But since, like, being more conscious about what I've been eating and not having as much meat and having more water and more vegetables and just being aware of that, I noticed a significant decrease in my cramps this time around.
Woohoo! Yay!
So I was like, wow, I'm not in pain. I'm great. So.
Yeah. Well, that is awesome. And congratulations. And thank you for sharing that with all of us.
Yeah, is there, in your experience, does the diet have a lot to do with that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It really does. Yes, absolutely. I've heard that a lot. I mean, I've got, you know, whether it's private clients or whatever, that their menstrual cycle, I actually will ask that question, you know, after I work with somebody for about a month. I'll say, so how is your usual PMS or what have you, and generally does it shift?
Yeah. So thank you for that. I'm already feeling great. So
that's so good. Yeah, keep up the great work and know that that's, you know, when we're experiencing less of those symptoms, that's actually your natural state of being. It shouldn't be a really painful experience. And you know what? I'm going to mention something else too, Lauren, while we're on this subject, that we have people in this program of all different ages. So some of them are in the realm of menstruating, some are not. And but around, I think, first of all, when your body's really balanced and healthy, you're not having a lot of symptoms. You're not having the cramping. You're not having the pain. And I used to get really bad migraines. That was something that I got right around my cycle. And you're not having that real extreme moodiness and all of that. However, what I do like to say is that you honor that your body is cleansing and that you're releasing blood, and that it's a time to just be a little gentler with yourself and kind of honor that and not try to, like, go, go, go the same way all the time. That it's like a natural rhythm of, like, oh, okay, this might be a time where I do more restorative yoga or something that's not, like, really heavy exercise. And what you'll notice when you do that is that, you take maybe like 3 days, the first 3 days or whatever, and you do that, you be a little more restful, a little more quiet with yourself, and then you come out of your period feeling amazing, like you feel very energized. It usually what I'll see is that there's not that depletion of, oh, my God, I've just been bleeding and I've been pushing through and trying to do the normal stuff. And it's not that you have to drop off the face of the earth. But when you do honor that, it's like you really are re-energized. It's a time to re-energize.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did things differently this time, and I know that this program has a lot to do with the choices that I was making.
Yeah, so, great.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy to hear that. So, if you want to mute yourself or if you have anything else to share, then you can do it.
I think I'm done, so I'm going to mute myself.
Perfect. All right. So, it's great to connect with everybody, and uh, if any any else would like to hop on, press star 6.
Anna, it's Lauren again. I just, real quick, I made this cilantro pesto tonight, and it was so good.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I just thought I'd do that just real quick. Thank you for all the recipes.
Okay. Definitely, yes. Happy to provide them. All right. Who else? Hi. Did anybody come on? All right. Let's see. I'm going to address, doesn't sound like I have anybody right now. I'm not going to leave you guys quite yet. I'm going to give you a little bit of time to let your questions or your comments formulate. But I think what I'll do is address the question that was emailed in. So, okay. Hi, Anna. First of all, I'm just going to read this straight up. I have to tell you, I tried the Brussels sprout breakfast, and I was quite surprised at the flavor and that my body was okay with cooked veggies for breakfast. I even shared with my husband, who agreed it was a tasty breakfast dish. Our only complaint was that the house is filled with not filled with a welcoming aroma of something yummy for breakfast. LOL. So yes, definitely not like the smell of baking muffins or something like that. But that's cute. Okay, so then she asked me, is 1 pound of Brussels sprouts a normal portion for one? And okay, I was full for a while, and now I'm craving something more, protein maybe. Is there protein that would go nicely with the Brussels sprouts? Because we did not have a pound of sprouts. We added broccoli, another veggie that I struggle with, and I was so sad to see it has so much benefit. So I'm trying to add it to dishes. I do enjoy the stem, the flavor and the texture of the stem. Can you get the same benefit from just the stem, or are all the nutrients in the flour? All right, so I'm going to start with that. There's a little bit more in this email. So she asks about portion size of the Brussels sprouts. That's the first question. And I'm going to say that a pound is actually a pretty good amount, and it's really kind of dependent. So if I was, you know, if I'm making a green, right, a green for breakfast, then I'm generally combining it with, personally, I'm making a green smoothie. That's like, I'm going to just say that that's the personal preference. But what I'm putting into the green smoothie, there are other ingredients in there. I'm putting a protein powder, and actually that's making me think that I'm going to list off some newer products, I think, that I'm really happy with as far as recommendations for healthy, kind of not really processed organic protein powders and stuff like that, because I don't think I've updated that list in a little while. But I'll add, you know, a protein powder, hemp protein powder, something like that, and maybe some almonds, and then sometimes I like to add coconut, so there's some different things that will happen in the smoothie that are in addition to the greens that I put in there. So if with a cooked veggie breakfast, where let's say I was going to saute or steam some green vegetables, then, of course, I mentioned the fat. Adding a healthy fat is really going to help with the digestibility and the protein, I'm sorry, and the enjoyment of that hugely, but it's also making all the nutrients more accessible to you, which is good news, and the flavor better. But I would add, you know, an organic egg, or even have a little something, maybe a piece of fish. I mean, you can experiment with this. Different people are going to have different preferences, and I like to think outside of the box. I like to take breakfast and think outside of the box. What is outside of the normal breakfast that people eat? And that you do that exploration. You know, that's kind of what the breakfast experiment is about. I'm actually going to talk a little bit too about breakfast in and of itself, because that question came up on the forum. But for right now, I'm going to answer her question as far as adding some protein or something else. And yes, you could even have it with a little bit of cooked quinoa or something, leftover quinoa. This is where you are exploring your own body. Where I've noticed for me, I like to eat my grains, my gluten-free grains, at night because they help me sleep better. There are certain components of the gluten-free grains like quinoa and millet and buckwheat and all of those that help with serotonin levels, which actually help with your sleep. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about serotonin later. I'm going to be adding that into our program as one of the newer kinds of things. But that, you know, that's me, what I find. And that if I have like a grain-based meal in the morning, it doesn't really work for me. It makes me feel kind of sluggish and heavy. So, and a lot of people will like to have some protein. So that's where eggs or something like fish or even a turkey sausage or even including some almonds. Like you can blend up some almonds or put it and make like a thick, I've made like an almond sauce out of almonds and maybe some other flavor. I mean, there's, you know, I'm just like putting things out there. Sesame seeds, maybe it would be sesame seeds or hemp seeds sprinkled on top. That will add a little bit of texture, a little bit of crunch, and also some protein. So those are some suggestions that I would say, particularly if, and it's not clear to me because, and I hope she doesn't mind because it's Cynthia. So, Cynthia, that she was saying that she was full for a while and now craving something more. So I don't know how long that while was. If it was like an hour, then yes, you might want to add in something more to the dish. But if it was like 3 hours, that's a pretty significant amount of time to feel satisfied and full and that your body's actually just ready for another something to eat, another little meal of some kind. Okay, so is there a protein that would go nice with Brussels sprouts? Yes, I answered that. And then she has a question about broccoli. And Cynthia, thank you for being so adventurous. Seriously. I don't even really like broccoli. That's my little confession. But I eat pretty much every other green vegetable, but I'm not super crazy about broccoli. Yeah, I eat it when I'm out. It's funny, but not. I don't make it at home. All right. So she's not crazy about the flowers, but likes the stems. Yeah, the stems have great nutrition in them. And they're, you know, slightly different than the florets, but absolutely some good stuff in the stems as well. And I'm glad that you like them because a lot of people will just throw them away. You can actually eat the leaves of the broccoli, too, if you ever get them at the farmer's market or pick it yourself and you've got all these little leaves that grow on it. Those are edible. A lot of people pick those off. And I find them to be less strong. Okay. And let me just go on into this. Thanks for the info about spinach. I had no idea it would deplete calcium, and we eat it cooked or a salad regularly. I'll mix up the greens from now on. Yeah, it's a great thing to do, to mix them up, because there's so many to enjoy. Then it looks like this last little topic. I was wondering if you would be touching base on tofu. I tried it in a Thai restaurant, and it was crumbled and took on the soft flavor, quite yummy. I've also tried it soft in chunks and told it was just like chicken, quite gross. Do you have any ideas for how to incorporate tofu in the diet for a finicky eater? Okay, great. This is a good question, and yes, I will be addressing tofu later on. But what I'm going to say, I want to answer this right away because it's here, and that is, I'm not crazy about tofu. So, Cynthia, if you're worried about trying to get yourself to like it, you don't need to. I don't think it's a great food. I think it's highly processed. It also is soy-based. I mean, it's soy. And it's hard to digest. So the only way that I recommend having soy, if you do eat it, is naturally fermented. Because what that does is it breaks down some of the indigestibility of the bean, of the soybean, and that it also breaks down some of the anti-nutrients, because soy can block you from absorbing certain nutrients. It's not my favorite food by any means. Naturally fermented soy products, which I mentioned later in the program, are tempeh, natto, which is like this natto miso. It's like a little more exotic. And a naturally fermented soy sauce or tamari. Those, and actually miso in general, when it's an unpasteurized miso, that would be it as far as the soy. But soy milk, tofu, all of that, I'm like, what I recommend from a vegetarian protein standpoint, I recommend looking to other beans and legumes and looking to nuts and seeds, looking to superfoods like bee pollen and spirulina, hemp seeds, hemp protein, and leafy greens actually have the amino acid profile. But granted, it's not a concentrated protein. I totally get that. And then, of course, eggs, depending on where you are on the scale in that realm. But then there's also some protein content in things like quinoa and millet and buckwheat. So That gives you an idea. I may be missing something, and I'm always open to, if I'm missing something and somebody wants to say, hey, what about this? But that's kind of what I would suggest for you, Cynthia, is don't worry about the tofu. Okay. So anybody else have any questions or comments or want to share something, you can press *6.
Hi, Anna. It's Maria.
Hi, Maria.
So, as you know, I am winding down a job of many years, and so I'm in a very intense place now, both emotionally and physically, and I'm actually having a hard time getting started with the program. I'm finding falling back to cravings. And part of it was, you know, having traveled to Austria where there were so many sweets and carbs that started it. And now with the fall and so much happening in my job, I'm finding it really hard to get jump started. So do you have any suggestions?
Well, yeah, I do. And I think one of them is to really ask yourself, whenever you're having cravings, whenever you're having difficulty, when there's kind of those hurdles of, okay, I want to do this, but I'm not doing it, that it's actually a time of asking yourself questions. So a bit of self-inquiry. And just saying, what is standing in my way? What is standing in my way? And if you're like, well, I'm craving certain things, then looking at, well, what am I craving? And why, and then kind of looking at how to support yourself. So I'm going to pick up something hypothetical. And actually, if you have any answers to any of those, then you can share them now, and I can use that as the example.
Well, I'm just wondering if what I'm experiencing is, underneath everything if I have a certain amount of fear and anxiety about a whole new direction in life after being kind of very comfortable in a situation.
Right. So, and that makes a lot of sense because it's a big life change. And during those times, from a food perspective, from the food perspective, but that's not the only area that I want to look at, I would say, what are the things that bring you a sense of groundedness, rootedness, and comfort, and then you look towards the healthier versions. So I'm going to give you some examples. For some people, they might be like, oh, my God, mashed potatoes. Like, that just gives me a sense of comfort, and or it's fat, or it's carbohydrates, or, like, you know, something. And then being able to work with that and create or explore a healthier option. I really, for me, what gives me comfort and makes me feel grounded, I love, like, creamy, kind of rich things. And so I'm
familiar.
I might take parsnips. I actually did this the other day. I might take parsnips and, you know, maybe carrots or something, but even just parsnips, and cook them, steam them, mash them with a coconut oil or ghee or something like that that provides this very soothing, but, you know, it's parsnips are great, and they have this root vegetable quality, and so any of the root vegetables provide you with rootedness. So just from an energetic standpoint, when we're feeling uncertain and we're feeling a little bit fearful and anxious, the root vegetables have a very grounding, centering energy to them. And
that makes sense. Rather than chocolate cake and whipped cream.
Oh, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is actually going to exacerbate it.
Exactly. Yeah, because it gives you comfort for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. But
and then it's gone.
Right, and you could still even just do the I have a gluten-free waffle recipe. I'm just thinking about, like, from a sweets perspective. I have a gluten-free waffle recipe, you know, and that can be, like, a comforting thing to do. And then from the perspective of chocolate, you know, I know you have some of my chocolate recipes, and being able to enjoy that with so that there's just making those tweaks where maybe you would make, like, the chocolate, a raw chocolate pudding that is right on the page that for the registration for this program. I have it right there. And maybe top it with some coconut bliss, vanilla coconut bliss, or I just posted on my blog a recipe. It's not chocolate, but it's persimmon pudding.
Oh, the persimmon pudding?
It's delicious. And
I don't think we have persimmons here yet. I haven't seen them.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Early
I mean,
for
I
us.
Understand. Right. I understand that there's a seasonal thing with persimmons. They are quite seasonal, but just kind of, you know, looking at things like that to create something. So that's from the food perspective. From the emotional perspective, I think it would really be a good idea for you to ask yourself, what are you afraid of? What is the worst case scenario? Because what happens, fear is this thing that is not real. Like, our fear is just not, it's not a real thing. Usually we fear things that are, well, not usually, always we fear things that aren't real because they're not right in front, they're not happening. We're not afraid.
Right.
We're not afraid of something that actually is. We're afraid of something that is not, that's made up, fabricated in our minds. And unless it's being chased by a wild animal, in which case, yes, that's real. But if you can ask yourself, what are you fearful of? And you just ask yourself, what am I fearful of? Are you afraid that you'll be a failure? And then what is failure? What does that mean? What would that look like? You know, does it mean that you'd be, sometimes underneath it all, especially when it comes to career and money, there's a fear of being homeless or like destitute out on the street, like underneath it all, even though you know that's not going to happen, there's this fear of that, like a basic fear of survival. And so if you can ask yourself what it is specifically for you and just kind of drill down a little bit, once you look at it, you go, that's ridiculous. That's not going to happen.
Maybe a fear of being marginalized because you're no longer defined by what you do.
Right. Right. So there you go. That is, and then what does that mean to you? And if you have to, I mean, if you look at that in and of itself and you go, that's silly. If you can then see it and go, that's silly, and then just kind of say, well, what would I, you know, what do I see? What are the possibilities? So you pinpoint the fear and kind of debunk it for yourself simply because you look at it and go, well, I don't know. That doesn't seem like it's really a possibility. But just let yourself see it and then flip it around to really look at the possibilities and the potentials that get you excited.
Well, thank you, Anna.
Yeah. That felt helpful?
Yes, it did.
Okay, good. So, it was a good question, too. I just want to say that. I'm nibbling on a little snack in case any of you hear me doing that. I think it's really important that we understand, you know, change, making those changes, particularly when there's a lot going on in our lives, can sometimes feel destabilizing, but ultimately knowing that it's going to provide you with a really strong foundation and that it doesn't have to be scary. So, does anybody else have a question or a share?
Hi, Anna. This is Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. I have just a quick question about cooking with oil. So I sometimes like to bake, I guess you would call it bake, or roast, food with oil, sweet potato fries or Brussels sprouts with olive oil. And I'm wondering, because I know that you mentioned using coconut oil a lot, and I mean, I know that olive oil isn't a high heat oil, but I just wonder what you have to say about cooking with oil. Sometimes I bake fish with olive oil. Is it bad?
I don't recommend using olive oil for heat. And the reason using it for heat, that you don't heat olive oil. The reason I don't recommend it is because it is sensitive. It's actually a very heat-sensitive oil. It's wonderful for after you cook or on a salad or something like that. And so then what is the alternative, right?
Well, it's interesting. So many recipes call for, pour some olive oil on it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's where you can just either swap them out or use an alternative and then finish with a little olive oil to give it an olive oil flavor. But what I would use for cooking, baking, all of that is, yes, coconut oil can be used. It generally has to be warmed a little bit and melted to put on top. Also, organic butter or ghee is another good cooking, baking kind of fat to use. And grapeseed oil, it can also, and grapeseed oil is somewhat flavorless. It doesn't really have a lot of flavor. So if it's a flavor thing and then you want to be able to add a little olive oil at the end to finish that off, then you have that option. And grapeseed oil is also a liquid, so you don't have to worry about melting it down, to toss something in it. Yeah, it's a good question, and people often ask me that a lot, and I have such a strong opinion about it, and they're like, really? No, I'm like, no, I don't recommend using olive oil for cooking.
Yeah, well, I knew that. You know, I knew that it wasn't a high-heat oil, but just kind of fell back into the habit of using it because it's, you know, so flavorful, and I just see it a lot. Also, I'm wondering, for the persimmon pudding, do you peel those persimmons, or do you just drop them in with the peel on?
Yep, I just drop them in with the peel on.
Okay, I actually bought some, so I'm going to try it this evening. Pretty excited about that.
Nice, it's delicious. You'll enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. So, press star 6 if you have anything to share or ask. Anybody? Let me share a couple of things. I'm actually just checking our Facebook group because... Anybody there that wants to share? Kind of heard a little rustling. Okay, great. Lori just posted something on our group, and she said her phone cut off, so she was dropped off the call. She was on the call, and she'll listen to the recording later. Okay, great. Yeah, so she just had some positive things to say. Fabulous. Okay, who else has anything that they want to share or ask? Feel free to do that.
Anna, can you still hear me?
Oh, yes.
You know, this is just a little technical thing. I've been having a lot of trouble both muting and unmuting the phone.
Okay.
So if you hear rustles, it's because I can't seem to unmute it.
Oh, okay, God. You can't mute yourself back.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah, I never know what that's about, to be totally honest. Hopefully nobody's having difficulty. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open it up for conversation mode, which means everyone's unmuted, and I'll just see if anybody else wanted to say anything in case we're having difficulty with the unmuting. So... Okay. So anybody... Was anybody having difficulty? Maybe not. Oh, it's so quiet out there, too. You guys are quiet. usually you unmute it and you hear all kinds of noises. Okay.
You probably heard my cat.
Yeah, maybe. All right, I'm gonna put it back into Q&A mode. Sorry for the back and forth, just in case we have... anything, and I'm going to share a couple of things, and then we'll close up the call if I don't have any more questions. So I think quite a few of you know me and kind of know the type of person that I am, and that I have, you know, I've got like my practical knowledge side of me that's going to talk about the nuts and bolts of food and all of the nutrition, and then there's kind of the esoteric spiritual side of me, hence the name of my business, Yoga Body Nutrition, and that they both really, in my opinion, work so well synergistically together. So what I kind of want to leave you with on this call is to honor the changing of the seasons and also just the energy of this time of year. We just yesterday had a new moon and a solar eclipse, and we changed the clock, and there's like this growing darkness, right? It's like it's dark at 5 o'clock now, and there's this increasing darkness. A new moon is typically a great time for new beginnings and setting intentions and planting seeds to come. Such a fabulous, really, I think, a fabulous time to be starting something, to be creating a commitment. So, I, you know, I'm just going to invite you to do something. And one thing that I do it for myself. I try to do it, like, around the new moon. There's also this Indian, you know, I'm a yoga teacher, so there's also this Indian-based big festival of light that started yesterday as well. And it's like one of the biggest holidays for them, and it centers around bringing in the light and overcoming the darkness. So what I'm going to suggest that you do, hopefully all of you have tuned into your vision already. Keep refining it for yourself. That's your guiding light. But in addition to that, you might want to create an altar. And don't let that word scare you, like, oh, my God, what does that mean? Do I have to, like, create this elaborate thing, and do I need to buy anything? No, not at all. An altar can be really, really simple. And it can just have objects that represent this journey for you and where you want to go. It could be anything from a picture of yourself at a time where you felt really good in your body, or it could just be, you know, some kind of inspiring, another inspiring picture, or a candle that you sort of know represents this journey for you, and that you light it at night when it starts to get dark. Something that just grounds you and connects you with this. It might be a stone. I've got some heart-shaped items. And so if I know that this is a journey that I'm taking to really honor myself, then maybe I'll put one of these heart-shaped items with a candle and just a little note to myself. Fold it up even. I also have a sculpture that I made, I call it Body as Temple. It was just a little project that I did. And so I'm speaking specifically from kind of the context of this program, I might have Body as Temple, my sculpture, as a centerpiece for it, and then have a candle there and, you know, whatever else I want to put on there. But just something that connects you with your process. And it's great because it's a physical reminder. You set it up. It doesn't even have to make sense to anybody else at all. But it's a physical reminder of what you're doing. You can find a little corner for yourself to set up this altar. Maybe it's going to be on a table. Maybe it's on your desk. Maybe it's by your bed. Maybe, you know, wherever. But it's an anchor. And I would say it's something that you can visit. And it's even a place where you can have your vision there written out. So that's just a little suggestion and a little something to carry with you and see if it resonates with you. That said, we're just like a minute after six. I'm not going to keep us on for much longer unless I have any more questions or sharings. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to come on and press star 6? Okay. So, if there's anything else that I wanted to cover here. I think the only other thing that I'm going to mention is it was mentioned on our group. And it is in reference to eating breakfast versus not eating breakfast. So I was having you do the breakfast experiment. Now, conventional wisdom or, you know, a lot of what you'll hear is like, always eat breakfast. Breakfast is the most important part of the day, blah, 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 blah. I will say, yes, it can be. But, and I may have even said that. You may have heard those words come out of my mouth on our audios. I want to say that this program was created a few years ago. And sometimes things change and shift as I get more experience in the field, as you know, research continues to come out and all of that. So what I'm going to say about breakfast, I do feel like it depends on your individual constitution, and that's going to be part of your discovery. And if you're really in a space of major blood sugar imbalance, it's going to be important to get something in your body in the morning just to start balancing your blood sugar. However, there's a little bit of leeway, and I'm going to talk about this more later on. There's going to be a little bit more that I'm injecting into this program, but that if it's working for you, like let's say that I can't remember who it was that posted about it, but she said that she's always not had breakfast, and then she's eaten at like 11. She's had kind of an early lunch at 11. And then something in the afternoon, and then a dinner. And it works for her. She hasn't found that she's had blood sugar crashes. She hasn't found herself craving and binging at night. She hasn't found that she's, her metabolism is slowing down because of it, you know, that she needs to kind of get more regular food inside of her. So I kind of said, you know, don't fix it if it's not broken. If that kind of schedule is working for you, go with it. There is going to be something that I'm going to be talking about called intermittent fasting. There's a lot of really compelling research around it right now. And so it kind of plays into this subject, but I'm not going to talk about it right now. But I will be sharing it with all of you. So I think that's really interesting I want to share. Again, I'm just going to say, last call for questions or comments. Press star 6. Okay, everybody. Well, I'm really happy to have had all of you on the call tonight. And thank you for everyone who did pipe in and ask a question and share something. We will be connecting again in a couple of weeks on these calls, and then, of course, on our Facebook group. And in the interim, if you need to email me questions, you can do that. And the recording should be up at some point tomorrow. I'll send it out. And I think that is going to complete us for this evening. Have a wonderful Monday night, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.